Welcome to Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
Welcome to the show. I'm Chris Graham. It's great to be back after a week of vacation for me, but not all of us got to take a vacation. Our next guest is Rod Mullins, and Rod had a busy weekend down at Thunder Valley in Bristol and covering the NHRA Thunder Valley Nationals. And Rod, big weekend, very busy three-day weekend for you down there, and a lot to recap, and I'm using the word cap, Ron Capps, one of the big winners this weekend. Yeah. But take us down there and get us into the action, how things went at Thunder Valley this weekend.
Of course, the Thunder Valley Nationals, always held on Father's Day, except for last year because of COVID, and then dismissed from the from 2020 because of COVID and so forth. But they got things back on track this year to have it on Father's Day weekend. It's always been a tradition here, I think, for 20 some years, I believe, at least they've had it on the weekend of Father's Day. So it's a great event to bring out the family to bring out all the different, members of the family in order to actually go into the pits and actually get to meet the drivers, even have one person, speaking of Ron Capps, you were talking about, they had a little incident happen over the weekend, happened on Saturday, as a matter of fact, and they were, they had to go and replace an engine, or matter of fact, it was on Sunday. That's right. It was on Sunday. They had an engine blow, and they even had one of the crowd or somebody from the crowd helping them pack the parachutes back in at the end of it. Now that's hands-on. If you really want to say it, it's hands-on more than anything else around NHRA. NASCAR, a little bit more cautious about these things. They don't like you kind of being around certain things like that, but the NHRA, very fan friendly when it comes to that.
So Ron Capps was one of the big winners, and boy, I'm looking at the speeds of these vehicles. Capps, his 70th career win, and his time was 3.984 seconds. His average speed, 324.36 miles per hour.
Yep,
that is moving. Obviously,
that is moving. It is very fast. I forget how many horsepower they've got those things cranked up. 12,000 horsepower, something in that neighborhood. But, especially with the way the weather conditions were this past weekend and also the track conditions, the track had had a kind of a redo. They had taken some of the bumpy spots out and they tried to reduce them out, but it's part of a big plan that they're going to try to do here over the next year or so, that they're going to try to restore or redo that part of Thunder Valley, especially from the starting point where the lights and down to the finish line. They're going to kind of redo that. But they still had some bumps in the track. Ron Capps, just tremendous. Really did not have a whole lot of power. Friday evening, when they had the qualifying, first round qualifying, a lot of these guys who were the professionals, except for maybe one, had just terrible times. They just had terrible times, weren't able to do anything. But by Sunday, they turned it up a notch, and that was one of the things that kind of surprised Ron Capps more than anything else, an under 4 second run down Thunder Valley, because considering the way the weather was, although it was nice and sunny, 78, 79 degrees, track temperature somewhere in the neighborhood about 130 degrees, you didn't have a lot of humidity. They were still kind of surprised they were able to get a sub 4.0 time down that track. But these cars are moving. I'm telling you, the funny car, somewhere in the neighborhood of anywhere from 320 to up to maybe about 330, depending on how the weather is, maybe even a little bit higher than that. The top fuel dragsters, anywhere from 200 to 300 miles an hour. These guys are moving quick when they come off the line. And you've told me before, you've had some experience being around some drag races and so forth up in that part of around Waynesboro and Augusta and so forth. And I never really had a chance to enjoy the drag races that much here until a couple of years ago when you guys gave me the opportunity to be able to go to my first summer nationals, as I call it, down at Thunder Valley.
Yeah, the racing that I'm used to is more what they call bracket racing, where you dial in a time and then you race against your own time and against your competitor as well. This racing it's all out. You're the first guy across the line, first guy or gal across the line, I should say, because I'm seeing in some of the categories here, the top finishers included some women, which is awesome to see. But yeah, the I mean, I can only imagine the you mentioned the horsepower. I mean, gosh, the funny cars and top fuel, Justin Ashley, 3.813 seconds, 325 miles per hour. Mm-hmm. Just the speeds that are achieved. I can only imagine what that's like. And then, yeah, I think people will be surprised. I was watching some of this yesterday FS1 maybe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there was also some Maine Fox had this yesterday, mm-hmm. with the NASCAR Top Series being off. People be surprised how many people there are on a team that have to work on this. This isn't, you know, even in a place like Eastside Speedway, which is local for me here in Waynesboro, Augusta County, mm-hmm. You know, your driver's there, but you've got a team of you got a crew, you got a pit crew there that's helping you out, mm-hmm. Mechanics and such that are working. It's an endeavor. It's a challenging endeavor to get these cars to perform at their top speeds.
Yeah, I tell you, when I was down in the pits on Friday, we did get treated to a really big storm that moved through on Friday evening down there, and it rained. But we got introduced or actually taken down to John Force's pits and had a chance to sit down and talk with John Force and Robert Height and also with Brittany Force. And we had a chance to kind of just, you know, all kind of sit around and talk with each other. And then the storm came and we got there and it was pouring the rain. And these guys were over there working on John Force's car, his peak car that he has, Chevrolet. And they were like ants working around on something. They were just swarming all over this car, making sure everything was all right. But then when the rain came, they were swarming to get everything battened down before something got blown off. And, you know, we were standing out there, the media standing out there, and we were kind of like, okay, what are we going to do for ourselves if it starts getting worse? And John Force, the consummate professional, even though some people call him the great mouth, you know, the way that he is, and he loves to talk, he came over, he said, if it gets any worse, we're getting in the trailer. And the first thought that entered my mind was, you know, storms, tornadoes, trailers, they don't mix very well. But I didn't say that out loud. But, you know, these things are huge. These trailers that they have, they haul as many as two cars along with many different parts. They've got a mini machine shop inside. Once they bring that out, they're able to go if they have to put a new engine together. Everything is already set. They just have to go and start slapping it together. And these guys are just, like you said, a crew. It's not just two or three people or four people maybe that go across the wall like in a NASCAR race and puts the tires on, puts the jack in, and maybe the fuel, five, six or something. This is a whole crew of people. And I'd say probably in the neighborhood of around 12 to maybe 15 of them will come up to the pit lane and they'll stand there and they'll watch and they'll see what's going on and say, well, we screwed that one up, or we got to improve on this next round and stuff, or we're going to get knocked out. And they also get a chance to see the competition and see how the track is running. So yeah, it takes a lot of dedication from some of these guys that are really pushing in there so far.
You know, in my past, I've seen the top fuels and funny cars at local tracks. I'm more familiar with like the pro stock, and I see there's mm-hmm. a pro stock division. And so what's that like? I mean, those cars, you know, they go a little slower, 184 miles an hour top speed for the winner, Aaron Stanfield, and a Chevy Camaro. But when I see, you know, a Chevy Camaro defeating a Camaro, that's what I'm familiar with. I'm familiar with cars that were once street legal, I guess. They're mm-hmm. probably no longer even anywhere close to street legal, but I'm familiar with that kind of concept. So what was that like to see in person?
Well, this time around, it was a little slow because these guys weren't really being able to come up with some of their best speeds. Stanfield won, like you said, with 184 mile an hour, you know, pop off the track, but he ran into trouble. He got a vibration in his car, and it must have been something to do with the tires because he said he felt like he was just shaking. Once he let off of it and then he slammed it back down again, well, already by that time, a second or two had elapsed and your speed, getting up to speed, kind of takes a hit at that point. But he took off at that point and he just did what he had to do and just hoping he was going to win because Erica Enders, who's been the champion, she was a champion. She's already won. She had won five out of six races so far on the season. Her car blew up. And I mean, just literally smoke was in on the inside. Smoke was billowing everywhere from outside that Melling Chevrolet. And we just were amazed at how she held it in a straight line down the track without hitting the wall and you know, on either side, either going and veering across the lane, going over into Stanfield's lane, or going into the right side of the wall. She wasn't too keen on talking about things yesterday, and I can understand why, because she was up for that championship, and then for the engine, everything to blow right there when she goes off the line. That was a big no-no for her. That was just something that she just did not like, did not want to happen. And Stanfield, he cashed in. He just did what he had to do. But, you know, he said, I think we could have done a little bit more of the speed and so forth. And sometimes they're over about 210, 215, 220 miles an hour, depending on, you know, the weather conditions and how things are. But, you know, Stanfield won that race. Just pretty much it was one of those lucky breaks that he got out of it.
Pro Stock motorcycles, also of interest to me. I've also, back in my past, mm-hmm. I've seen some of those racing motorcycles, and 194 miles an hour average speed for Jerry Savoy defeated Angel Sampi, who fouled out, red-lighted in the final. Talk about the motorcycles and what some of the storylines were there.
Well, the storylines there was Jerry Savoy changed engines 22 minutes before he had to go off the line. Okay. That was the shocker. You know, some people are saying, how do you do that? How did these guys go? I can barely put a bookshelf together and get it with all the screws and everything else. This is based on what I've been doing today. And by the way, also, and you know, I can barely put a bookshelf together without having to go back and read the instruction book. And you're putting a motorcycle together and an engine back together in 22 minutes. You guys got to be miracle workers. And you know, Angel Sampi was over there, and she was just, she was hoping that they got to race, because she did not want to race by herself. And, you know, she got her wish, and she red lighted, ended up not being able to go through that. But, you know, all she'd had to do was not even move forward. If Jerry Savoy had something to happen to him, she could have red lighted and still ended up winning the competition out of it. But Savoy just, he took advantage of it. And, you know, he was a really nice guy, too. They're both from Louisiana. He's just a super guy. He's, you know, got some Cajun in him. You can tell by the accent when he's talking. He says, you know, the only thing I know is speed. That's the only thing I know. He said, my dad, Blue, I think was his dad's name. Blue had, that's what he lived for, speed. And he said, you know, they've had some tough breaks and they've had some things happen. One of the reporters asked him, you know, what happened, you know, about last year? Why weren't you here last year? Well, that was in the fall last year, and they had a hurricane bearing down on Louisiana. And he says, well, I'm not leaving my home to come up here and race when I should be in Louisiana battening down the hatches on one of these hurricanes. And so he missed out last year, but man, he couldn't stop talking about Bristol Dragway and just the beauty of it. And also the way that the sound reverberates through the mountains and everything. He was just praising the track and also what they had done so far on. He just thought it had been great, but he said he hoped he could continue the momentum, what he got off this win from Sunday.
So you talked about the environment there, and that's a great segue. I was going to ask about the environment there versus, you know, you're a regular for us at Bristol Motor Speedway covering the NASCAR races for us a couple times a year. Maybe compare and contrast the two environments, drag versus the stock car.
You've got some NASCAR fans that still love the idea of speed and love things, you know, moving in a straight line at 200 and 300 miles an hour. But you've got guys that are really, these are the guys and the fans and the folks that really like what goes into building an engine and what goes into putting this thing together. They're the grease monkeys from the weekend. And I have to say, my first cousin is one of them. He and his son managed to go to the Sunday finals. And, you know, my cousin Danny, he's a grease monkey at heart. That's what he loves to do. And I was talking to him about something. I've got a car here that belongs to my dad, and he's going to actually take that and stuff. And he's going to take the car and ask him, I said, what are you going to do with it once you get it and stuff? He says, he bought him a 55 Chevy van, panel van, I think, from somebody in Kansas. And he's going to take stuff off of an 88 Buick LeSabre, and he's going to modify the engine with it. And I'm like, that's incredible and stuff. He said, just want to be able to make it run. You know, I can take things and I can, you know, do some different things with it. That's what this kind of racing is all about for some of these guys that are grease monkeys. They love that sort of thing, to see how so-and-so did this or how so-and-so is doing that. And then you get to be in the pits. You know, there's a difference with NASCAR, and I think I've mentioned this before to you on a podcast. There's a difference in a NASCAR race because you don't see, or you're not around them, or the fans are not allowed around them while they're changing out, you know, something with a motor or something like that that's going on. But you can actually be walking in the pits at Bristol, and you can do this at some of the other facilities too for drag racing. But when you're down there, you actually just stand back there and you watch them. You watch all this stuff, and you can get to interact with the drivers too. I know Friday, John Force, after the storm, John Force came out there, and they were starting to get things going back again on the for the Peak Chevrolet, and he came out there and he started, you know, going around pressing the flesh with the fans and stuff, shaking hands, signing autographs, and everything. It's just different. It's a different experience, and you know, I think that's why NHRA has been consistently ranked sometimes in fan support, probably a little stronger than what NASCAR has been. It's a little more friendly. It's more fan friendly. It's a little more friendly all the way around. I'm not saying NASCAR isn't, but you just get a chance to actually get to meet these guys and talk with them a little bit more, and come to find out they're just everyday people. They're just everyday people, but they've been blessed to have an opportunity. Like Ron Capps. Ron Capps ran for Don Schumacher for several years, and then he decided to start his own team up this year. One of the toughest things that you can do, but already he's picked up his second win already from the start. So, you know, it's good things happen when you're able to get around people that you can bring into your organization and work, and then, you know, get the support behind you. You can do a lot of great things. And that's what Capps is definitely demonstrating right now.
Yeah. You wrote a lot about the fact that Ron Capps starting his own team. It's one thing to race. I mean, and when your livelihood depends on how well you do from weekend to weekend, that's challenging too. But to also have to provide the funding. I know just at the local level, the guys who are out, anyone out there listening, your favorite drag strip, your favorite local drag strip, that it's an expensive endeavor at that level. I can only imagine how much more exponentially expensive it is to race an NHRA. So yeah, I mean, there's the challenge of winning, but you know, yeah, you've got to pay for all the people there. You got to pay for all the equipment. You got to pay for the engines. And then in his case, he's one of those who had to. He blew his engine out on Sunday. Yeah. So, I mean, that comes out of his pocket there. That's a lot of, pressure, to maintain, being the racer and the team owner.
Yeah. And he was quick to praise Toyota too. He said there was one thing that happened more than anything else. He said when that car blew, he said, I'm not saying anything bad about anything else, but he said, you know, they said that the Toyota Supras, they were built to survive things and they were built to do these things. He says, well, by guarantees, this is a great car. You know, this is, you know, in order for me, he said, we would have had to start all over with the car. And I think what they ended up having to do was take the body that they had, put the engine back into it, rebuild the engine, and just simply cover over it with the other cover that they had that went over the car, like they did, because that blew it all into pieces when it went down the track and it blew. Boom, it went all over the place. And so they had to replace that. But yeah, the funding is tough. It's like every other sport. Advertising and sponsorship dollars have to go so far. And I know Napa has given him a lot of money, and he's one of their big spokespeople that they have throughout the sport. Chase Elliott, of course, on the NASCAR end. But Capps is a little bit more of the friendly kind of guy. He's the kind of guy that you can laugh with and kind of get along with and talk about and so forth and talk to. And, you know, Napa loves that relationship. They wouldn't have gone with him if it hadn't been for him. So I think that makes a big difference as well.
So let's go back. What I mentioned earlier in the podcast, NASCAR's Cup Series was off this weekend. Mm-hmm. But we didn't do a podcast last weekend because I was too busy sunning myself on the beach in OBX. We didn't catch up with some big news out of NASCAR. Daniel Suarez, his first career victory, and he becomes the first Mexican-born driver to win a NASCAR Cup Series race. So a lot of historical significance to Daniel Suarez, who has had a good career, but finally getting into the winner's circle.
Yeah, and this is one I've been calling for several weeks, and I've been calling and I've been tossing out the name in there. Daniel Suarez is going to win a race. Sooner or later, he's going to win a race, and it happened to be on the road course at Sonoma, and he did an excellent job. And that Trackhouse Racing team, they put him in the right place, and he put the car in the right place at the right time where they needed to be at there to finish that race. And, you know, he was just so overjoyed at the end of that race. I felt for him. I mean, it was just like, you know, this has been a long time coming. You've been in a situation of where you ran for Joe Gibbs for a season. I think it was a season or two, and he really didn't get the support. He really didn't get the support out of him that he should have. And then he ended up moving on, kind of going to one direction, going to another, and then finally settling with Trackhouse here just last year. And they put him all together with it. And, you know, I've just had been saying for a long time, give him enough time. And I think once he gets that first win under his belt, it's going to come a little bit easier for him at that point. But man, I tell you, they're still talking right now. If Suarez is going to make the playoffs, he's going to have to win another race. That's the way it's going right now, because we are talking point separation here by just single digits in a lot of ways of where these guys are going to stand, who could get into the chase and who might not get into the chase. And one of the things that was talked about, Suarez or somebody at the Trackhouse Racing, they're going to have to come up with some big wins here down the stretch in order for them to be able to make it in. They could bump somebody like Hendrick or somebody else out of this whole mix.
So the weekend off for the Cup Series, and we also make the shift from the Fox family of TV networks now to NBC, the family of networks. NBC mm-hmm. and USA Network will have the second half of the season starting on Sunday at Nashville Super Speedway. That one's on NBC at 5 p.m. Give us a quick thought or two on how we can get ready for Nashville this weekend.
Well, you got to remember, this is not Nashville, Tennessee, per se. This is Lebanon, Tennessee, just outside of Nashville, but they call it that. But folks, we're getting ready for the big transition that's going to happen in the next year or two when they finally do move back to the Nashville Fairgrounds and the old Speedway that they had there. There's going to be a lot of involvement from Speedway Motorsports, and also Bristol Motor Speedway is going to be helping out with that endeavor. But for them, this is a really nice track in Middle Tennessee. It's a wonderful track. A lot of the Xfinity drivers have drove on this track before. Can't say enough about this track. It's just a really great facility. It's a small facility, but you know, that was the thing. They've been wanting to get back to Nashville for a long time. Nashville had a lot of history, especially Darrell Waltrip and some of the other regulars that drove there at the old Fairground Speedway. And then government comes in and government says, we've got people that live in houses down here from the fairgrounds and stuff. And it's like, fairs don't make noise. You know, what are you talking about? These are race cars. And well, we don't want them here. And then finally, the mayor of Nashville has finally kind of, you know, given in a little bit. And I think the people are finally saying, hey, look, this could put us on a stage here again where we're at now. I mean, they've got a IndyCar race that goes through the streets of Nashville that's really great. So why not get NASCAR back into the city? And that's what they're planning on doing here within the next year or two. So this Nashville Super Speedway that they have outside of Nashville, great track. Anything goes this coming weekend. I don't know. We may see the sudden ebb of Denny Hamlin back again after having so many bad things happen to him this last race. Back and forth. You just don't know which Denny Hamlin's going to show up from week to week at the track. And then also Hendrick's having their troubles right now. Chase Elliott didn't do well at the road race. And then William Byron, really a non-factor. Kyle Larson had trouble as well. So there's some of these teams that's welcomed this open week to try to go and get their mindset as to what they need to jump into when they get to Nashville this weekend. And that's going to be a big one for them. This is going to be the big turnaround spot. We always used to say that the 4th of July race, the firecracker race at Daytona, that was the middle of the season. That was the turning point of where your season's going to go. If you're on the move, then it could be your catalyst on into the season. If not, it could be your jumping point to get ready for next year, or it could be your Waterloo before it's over with.
Well, on that note, Ron, I want to thank you for the time and effort put into this past weekend and getting us ready for next weekend. We look forward to talking to you again next week.
Appreciate it, Chris. Thanks.